Hello and welcome everyone to yet another technically plagued episode of MTG Potpourri. Me hosting as usual is Tom, and joining me, and hopefully they can actually hear my sultry voice, I have BJ Woods.
BJ Woods, thank you.
Yep, there you go. And then also Adam Staborski.
Why don't I have like a sweet nickname?
Do you want one? Usually people don't get happy when I give them nicknames, because you get names like, you know, Boner Jams and whatnot.
I mean, I didn't say I'd like it. I'm just asking why I don't have one.
Well, think about it.
To be fair, Boner, like, all my nicknames were kind of like community given, sort of. Or like, they were like said on cast, and then people liked them, so they just kept repeating them. They were never intended to be a permanent nickname.
Yeah, like you kind of mentioned, we went through this previous podcast, but Boats was one. Obviously, we had Boner Jams for a while.
Agent Boats is what most people call me.
Agent Boats. Boats was a deck.
No. Boats was what I was called in high school by my sophomore English teacher, because my feet were as big as boats.
Okay. I say that could have gone a really, then, really gross direction there for a second, but okay.
You should remember this. I told you this story before, Tom. You just don't care about me.
I'm listening. But sometimes when you were getting like into the heavy tourney talk there, I'm daydreaming.
But no, and then I went on the A-team, and they all call me Agent Boats as a result of that. I don't know.
Is that like a Canadian thing or something? Or
yeah, I guess.
Call yourself the Mounted Police. So Adam.
So I guess I'm just not. I don't say anything awesome or cool, or I don't record enough to get nicknames. Yeah, I think that's what Conley just summarized.
You just have to record long enough so you say something dumb.
And you have to go on an edgy podcast like the A Team, and you have to, I don't know, you have to tell them something embarrassing or unknown about yourself, and then you'll get a nickname out of it.
So what makes a magic podcast edgy?
Well, I don't know. They're more willing to talk about, you know, the chick that Jay Bush banged last night. Or
so you just like, mean like R-rated, basically.
Yeah, they just will talk about anything. Like, they don't have filters when it comes to their topics, which is, you know, it's funny, but it's not for all audiences by any means.
Okay.
But you have to be like in that type of environment where you're kind of like holding nothing back in order to like get an actual nickname. Because if I have to filter my nickname, if I have to censor it, then it's not like a true from the heart nickname.
So if your nickname was, say, like labia head, how would you kind of tone that one down?
That one seems pretty toned down, mostly because it's ridiculous.
Or labia majorum head. I guess you have to be specific. There's two types of labia.
I don't think males enjoy having their nicknames come from female genitalia.
I would just generalize that to males don't. People don't like having nicknames for any genitalia. That's just a people thing.
What about like animal genitalia? Like there's like a cloaca. I think cloaca is a cool word.
I don't even know what that is, and I don't want to know.
It's a urogenital pore. It's when your pee hole and poop hole come out the same hole.
Oh.
So like birds have cloacas and things like that. And
dinosaurs. Is that why it's always like white and runny?
Mm-hmm. And that's why if you read anything about dinosaurs and how they mated, they called it the cloacal kiss, because they'd have to try to get their cloaca sort of bumping up next to each other. And when you think about dinosaurs and how big they were, that's actually not as easy as you think. So there's actually a lot of scientists trying to figure out how dinosaurs
mated. I just want to jump in here, Tom. I'm terrified because you are a medical doctor for what species? Humans?
Yeah, humans.
But you sound like a veterinarian. What medical school did you actually go to, Tom?
But in sleep, though, a lot of the stuff that we know about it actually comes from animals. So we actually do know quite a bit about animal sleep, that some animals only sleep half their brains at a time, and that helps us then understand kind of human physiology in a lot of ways. So thank God I don't want a cloaca.
So you're saying that you're
evolved out of that.
All I heard was that you're a veterinarian.
He's a veterinarian that works on people despite not having a people license.
You are now the Dr. Nick, Tom. That's your nickname. You're Dr. Nick.
I'm a veterinarian. He was a great character on Simpsons. But hey, guys, this is actually a magic podcast, not a podcast about dinosaur intercourse.
People. We know each other for magic, but this is not a magic podcast. There's a reason it's called Potpourri. And not like something magic related, like upkeep or like
Potpourri.
The main phase.
Oh God, the is how is there not a podcast named The Main Phase?
There has to be at some point, I'm sure.
I'm not familiar with that. That's overall actually a great. That would have been a great name for a podcast. All right. Too bad our pirate ship has sailed. So
we have the best name.
I think it is the best name. Who else would be able to sell like little hemp bags and tie-dye t-shirts?
It's easily the best name because you don't want your name to be like catchy and easy to say, because then you become hip and mainstream. You need it to like be like just hard enough to where most people below an IQ of like 130 don't really know what the word means or how to pronounce it. And then you have an underground podcast.
I still argue that people know the word because either they know what potpourri is or they have watched Jeopardy. I do not think it's that rare of a word.
Is it Jeopardy or Celebrity Jeopardy SNL skits? Because I'm pretty sure it's Celebrity Jeopardy SNL skits that they know.
More people have seen Celebrity Jeopardy SNL skits than have seen Jeopardy. It's the facts.
That probably is true. After you say S words and Jap anus relations, that is Japan US relations. And you disgust me. I was banging your mom, Trebek. My mom is in Canada and in a nursing home.
Possible way to do it cleanly here. Let's talk about standard.
Okay, so on the previous podcast that we kind of tried to do, we were talking about standard because that is the commonly talked about, but that's the next big major tournament. And right now, I am guessing a fair amount of people maybe have checked out a little bit from standard. So Conley's going to tell us why we should be excited and what's bringing us back into that just money suck hole that is standard.
Yes, because that's what I'm here for, to keep Tom up to date on tournament magic. The two tournaments, the two tournaments are standard. This weekend is SCG Invitational in Charlotte, which will be standard and legacy. And then the next Grand Prix in the U.S., at least. There's also the Mox this weekend, which may or may not have standard. I'm not sure.
What's up, Mox?
The Magic Online Championships.
Okay, CS. I was thinking MOX.
So well, it's not actually. I guess it's not technically the Mox because it's not the series, which is where the S comes from. It's just the championship, so it's just the Mock, maybe, I guess. I don't know. But yeah,
Mox makes me think of a shady Bitcoin trader.
Well, it normally is Mox. MOCS is like the tournament that you play in once a month or whatever to get to this big tournament that's happening. So. Okay. But that's the series. That's Magic Online Championship series. But this is no longer the series. This is like the finale. So I don't know what you call it. The Mock-fa.
The season of the Mock-fa.
I'm pretty sure it's the Magic Online Championship Series Championship.
Colon.
The Mock-ska. Is that it? Mock-ska? All right. The Mock-ska has happened this weekend. And I don't know if that has standard in it or not. I would look it up right now, but by the time anyone hears this, that tournament's going to be over and we'll talk about it next week. next week is Grand Prix Phoenix, which I will be attending. That is a standard Grand Prix. So expect standard to be on display there. And then we're not going to see standard for a little while after that. The next Pro Tours block, and there's not many standard Grand Prix, at least in the US or North America, I should say. I'm not sure what's going on internationally. But as for standard, yeah, I think that I kind of long-winded this in the last one, so I'll keep it shorter this time. But basically, standard has come down to a bunch of monocolor decks, which basically the optimal way to build a monocolor deck is the optimal way to build a monocolor deck. And as a result, there is not as many variations in the format in terms of deck speed. You don't have guild colors, and therefore every color can be paired with any color and you have a good deck. Instead, you have every color is paired with itself, which leads you to five good decks. And Ravnica has pulled against that a little bit because it has some strong incentives to be multicolor. Obviously, Sphinx's Revelation is got to be the number one most powerful card to do that, which leads to all sorts of control decks. You have Esper control, Bant control. I'm working on five-color control right now, which is a bit of a stretch. They're all effectively the exact same shell, though, which is we want Supreme Verdict, a.k.a. Wrath of God, and we want a gigantic card drawer to recoup all of our one-for-one removal and counter spells. And, you have those two things going on, and then the rest of your deck is, basically could be anything as long as it does those – leads to those two things. So you kind of have that division. Then you have the monocolor decks, which – black and blue easily being the two standouts. Green, red, and white all have showings. They all have potential. White being the least of those by far. It's more of an aggro deck that plays Brave the Elements, mostly because its god is very bad, and it doesn't have any way to abuse Nykthos. But the green deck is reasonable. It's more of a ramp strategy. Red deck's more aggressive, using Fanatic Emogis and Purphoros to do a bunch of damage to you. But the black and the blue are the two decks everybody knows about, Mono Blue Devotion and Mono Black Devotion. Those are kind of like the king of standard. And then outside of those two factions, the control and the monocolors, you have basically red-white burn. You have Dredge, which we'll talk about in a minute, which is kind of my offering to standard. And then you have, I don't know. I think Mono Black Aggro is a reasonable choice. It's a variation on Mono Black Control. It's not really worth talking about because it's pretty self-explanatory. If you're interested in that sort of deck, articles and videos on channelfireball.com for me. But outside of like very fringe strategies, you have like some monster decks, like Jund Monsters is sort of a thing because it likes Reaper of the Wilds and it likes Planeswalkers, basically. There are two very good green-red Planeswalkers in the format, so decks will try to play those. Planeswalkers are always the like the kind of cherry on top of an archetype. Like, if you have a good Planeswalker, you have a reason to exist, sort of, which is why Esper exists, because it has Jace and Elspeth, which are easily... Well, I wouldn't say easily. Elspeth's the best Planeswalker in Standard. Jace might come behind Domri, but he's certainly top three. And when you have that sort of powerful cards as incentives, you do have a deck. But like I said, really, you have those three contingents, the kind of the fringe decks, the Monaco decks, and the control decks. And it's basically been like this for, I don't know, 6 months now since the release of Theros. And even though that Born of the Gods came out and introduced some new cards to those existing decks, it really didn't introduce too many new decks to the format. So the one deck that I've been pushing for since Theros came out was Black-Green Dredge, is what I called it. No actual Dredge cards in the deck, but if you're familiar with the archetype Dredge, it has the same style of play where you dump a bunch of cards in your graveyard and use those beneficially, is effectively what you're trying to do. And Dredge was also the Golgari mechanic, and since it's black-green, etc. I was trying to play this deck in Theros, and the deck was fine then. I played it at a Grand Prix. I would have played it at two, but I had issues with going to Dallas due to the snowstorm. But
tell us about tournaments that you don't have an issue getting to. That would actually probably be a shorter
discussion. I missed three Grand Prix this year due to travel issues. It's been the most I've ever missed. It's been kind of crappy, but... but yeah, I would have played Dredge there. It was a strong deck, and I think it was a viable deck, but it was missing a few pieces to really make it super efficient and or consistent. But with Born of the Gods producing Satyr Wayfinder and Herald of Torment, which the deck uses very effectively just to grant evasion to its large creatures, it uses those cards, and the deck has become significantly more consistent as a result. I would have loved to see the Black-Green Temple printed in Born of the Gods, but it was not, unfortunately. But that's basically the only thing that the deck really could have picked up from Born of the Gods to be super happy with. Obviously, individual random powerful cards that we're not expecting, like a Vengevine or something like that, all of a sudden being reprinted would be insane for the deck. But I do think the deck is very well poised right now. It's top 16, the last two... Standard Grand Prix last week in Cincinnati by Ari Lax, and 2 weekends ago in Brazil. And I have a very long article on channelfireball.com last week that goes into detail about Black Green Dredge and talks about Jund Dredge, which is a variant that plays Gorclan, so many random names. Gorclan Rampager. I was gonna say Boros Rampager. I'm like, that doesn't sound right.
Where's Gorclan Rampager. Like, somebody made up like creature, like
these, exactly. Like, you just
it's really hard to remember.
Well, and all day I spend like in an office where we deal with our own made up creature names and stuff like that. So like I'm talking about like, you know, all kinds of just made up, completely on the spot things that like I literally was like, hey, I have an idea for a thing, what should I call it? And then I call it something absurd, and that turns out that was a magic name and I just subconsciously didn't realize it. I don't know, but it happens all the time. But regardless, Gorclan Rampager is the big pool for the green red archetype, giving trample to your Night Howlers, your Jared, and your Nemesis Immortals, and I guess Shadowborn Demon to a lesser extent, although he flies, so he doesn't need it quite as much. That deck's quite viable as well, I think. I'm not sure which is better. I think Black Green's better, and Black Green's more consistent. So that would be my first choice for any tournament if I were playing this weekend. Although the Jund Dredge, I think, is perfectly viable. And if you're a little more of an oddball, Five-Color Control is the other deck I've been working on with Chromanticore and all. If you're interested in that archetype, I wrote an article for TCG Player last week. So go check that out. And yeah, I mean, I have kind of had the brew bug recently. I fell out of what I would say playing shape for quite a while, between depression and not having the time to dedicate to Magic that I would like. And I just, I don't know, was struggling quite a bit. But when you get what people call the fire, aka you kind of, you get a burning passion to kind of get back into Magic.
It or gets gonorrhea.
Yes.
That also gives you the fire too.
That's what they mean, Tom. Thank you. When you get the fire, though, it's like, I don't know, you feel like you just got to play Magic Infinite. And so I've been brewing a ton of decks because that's the thing I enjoy most about Magic. And so I've been trying to kind of force some less than tier one strategies into the format. And I think they're all viable and strong. So I'm kind of proud of what I've been able to do. But for the most part, standard is basically choose blue, black, or control. And then if you have a wild side to you, you can pick one of the more fringe decks that have some pool to them, but are not necessarily at the top of the pyramid. And I don't know. I think that trying to do anything too crazy right now is probably a risk, just because those decks that we're talking about, blue and black specifically, are so consistent at doing what they do. Like, they've been tuned and poked around and fixed up by thousands upon thousands of people for thousands upon thousands of hours. And so they just do what they do so efficiently that it's really tough to be cute or do anything tricky or take a turn off that, like, you know, any type of like turn five or turn six combo deck, let's say that exists in the format, it like wouldn't even be good enough to beat these decks because they just do what they do so well. So it is a tough format to brew for, but at the same time, you know, I know as a brewer that brewers do not stop brewing. So eventually something will break through.
Was it surprising to you that you kind of got the fire back for standard, or because it seems like modern?
It was modern too. Okay. But the thing is, standard is the format where the most tournaments are occurring. I kind of have to always focus myself on whatever tournaments are coming up. I can't really afford to spend too much time on a format that is not in a nearby tournament. So that's why I don't play any Legacy very often. For example, it's like one Legacy tournament a year, two Legacy tournaments a year. And therefore I just don't know the format, cause I'll prep for it for a week before or whatever, but it's just a really big waste of time to spend infinite hours on that. Standard is kind of is the most evergreen format. It's the one that you hear about the most when, you know, people send you deck lists on Facebook or they ask you questions on the street or whatever. It's always about standard. So it's really tough not to kind of know what's going on there. Modern, I was brewing for a ton for the Pro Tour, since it was modern. But after the Pro Tour and then Richmond the week after, there really isn't any modern events for another month and a half. So I kind of get to, you know, stop thinking about that a little bit for right now and focus on standard.
All right. So, I mean, it sounds interesting, at least for me as just a observer, kind of casual follower, that there's going to be some new decks hopefully to be seeing. And I'm looking through your five-color control deck here on the TCG Player article, and the land base just kind of makes my mind hurt.
Yeah, there are no lands that always come into play untapped. Like, there's, I think my current version is 14, let's see, I have 13 shock lands and 12 temples. So no basic lands and no lands that just enter play untapped unless you want to pay two life. So you generally do play a turn behind with that deck, but Sylvan Caryatid catches you up very quickly, and Kiora catches you up. So if you play a turn two Sylvan Caryatid, then you're back on track like any deck. And if you play a Kiora, you actually get ahead. So the deck actually functions pretty well, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it looks like a fun deck, but wasn't just a...
No, it is. I literally don't even own all the cards for it on Magic Online. I've been borrowing cards for it because, like, Sphinx's Revelations are 35 tickets a piece, and, like, Jace's are, like, 30 tickets a piece. Like, standard's pretty expensive online right now, just because, kind of like what we were talking about, when there are few decks to choose from, the cards that do go in those decks are of very high value because everybody's playing that deck. So, like, Sphinx's Revelation is in every control deck as a 3 of or 4 of, so it's just naturally very valuable. That's the same case for things like Thassa or even like Erebos. You'd be surprised how like cards that, you know, are, should not be worth a lot of tickets are actually just very valuable because everybody's playing them. Pack Rat itself is like 3 tickets.
Really? Okay.
It's like the most open limited card of all time. You face one in every draft.
It does seem like you hear about Pack Rats a lot when you talk about not only you, but other players that when I've read their articles, it seems like Pack Rats are everywhere for me.
Well, it's the strangest card because it was the best possible thing you could possibly ever open and sealed. It was just unbeatable, basically. So everyone started talking about Pack Rat. They're like, why is this rare? It's unbeatable. Then people realized that the exact same thing was true for draft. So everybody and their brother started playing Pack Rat and draft whenever they could, and they would just always win. It had probably, like, I don't know what the win percentage of a Pack Rat on turn two is, but it has to be 90% or higher. It was absurd. And then people, you know, it was never a card considered for constructed. And then somebody like basically put it in their deck and they were like, holy crap. Like basically like the removal in this format is not doing what it needs to do to beat this card that on, you know, 3 turns from now kills you because there's 4 5/5s in play and I never had to play another thing at sorcery speed in this game. Go ahead.
I was going to say the mono black devotion deck, it was the devotion mechanic with Grey Merchant of Asphodel that really helped push it over because unlike other tokens, Pack Rat is a copy of a card, and so it actually counts, each token actually counts towards your devotion. So yeah. Getting 2 or 3 out, even if you can't necessarily attack through, it's like each one is like an additional, you know, piece of a burn spell as soon as, you know, Grey Merchant comes up.
And there's another little bonus in most of these decks, but specifically the black decks, and that's that they play Mutavault, which when you activate Mutavault also contributes to the size of your Pack Rat. So you'll have only 3 Pack Rats in play with 1 mana left over, and you'll attack your opponent, and he'll be like, oh, I'll trade my 3-3 for your 3-3 or whatever, and you just tap that mana to activate your Mutavault, even though it's not attacking, and your Pack Rats just instantly shoot up to 4-4s. So it gets like very difficult to like take down these Pack Rats when they start going, because not only are there multiple copies of them, so unless you have something like a Detention Sphere or a Supreme Verdict, again, that's why control is good, because it can deal with Pack Rat. But unless you have like one of those cards that actually just deals with all the Pack Rats at once, you're never going to be able to just one-for-one the Pack Rats enough to deal with them all. So that's why the card's just like very, very powerful and popular. And it's a cheap card in terms of mana cost. Like a lot of cards that you see take over games, they cost 5+ mana, like a Sphinx's Revelation. But a Pack Rat can come down on turn 2, and the game could literally end on turn 3. If you have not killed that Pack Rat and you don't have a way to fight through a bunch of oncoming Pack Rats, the game could just be over on turn 3. So it's just it's one of those cards that has actively warped the format, every format that it has been played in. I'm sure it'll eventually transition over to modern if trends continue.
Well, and apparently you've also gone to Segway Academy, because modern is the other big topic I want to talk about, especially, you know, kind of beginner decks for modern. It's because we're trying to have a big get together for Grand Prix Minneapolis. It's going to be modern. Me being a casual player, this will be one of the first tournaments I've gone to in quite a while. So Conley's been kind of trying to coach me and help me and getting into modern.
I don't want any affiliation with your results of this tournament.
I'm going to be wearing a t-shirt with your face on and saying, Conley said I would win. It'd just be kind of a big, nice face right there.
Tom, if you get a t-shirt made with Conley's face on it,
no,
I will cover the cost of that.
I haven't made
it. Assuming it's like $30 or less, because it's got to be less than that.
There's people that made a shirt with my mustache on it. I posted on Twitter. It was like, I don't know. They're like, there's a campaign for hashtag Conley's mustache.
I imagine you use like on that t-shirt though, it'd be like on like girl skirts where it's like that very short fringe. You could use that as like a really good mustache where it would actually like move and swish.
Yeah.
Or that really nappy yarn. Cause it looked like in your pictures, you, it looks like, I mean, it looked kind of, came in kind of patchy. If I remember well, seeing your pictures.
The picture that I took 4 months ago, sure, it might have been patchy.
Well, that's the one you have up there. So, but that when I think about Conley's mustache, that is the visual image that I get.
It's fair. You should watch my stream.
Yeah, at some point, as being an old person, I will have to have the just overwhelming popularity of streaming explained to me. Because I still don't quite understand, you know, watching somebody play versus playing yourself.
It's a different experience. So I kind of thought the same thing originally, but I'll actually just talk about this because streaming has become something that I do on occasion and also enjoy heavily. And I'm sure Adam has viewed a stream or two in his day since he deals with coverage.
Magic streams. You better, you know, corral.
Yeah, Magic streams. But
you might have watched some other sort of types of streams.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not even just Magic streams, though. I actually have really enjoyed League of Legends streams. I enjoy playing League of Legends, but watching a League of Legends stream, or specifically their LCS, which is their like big season, like NBA season type thing they do. Watching those types of things, it's different. It's like you get to enjoy the things you enjoy. You get to watch like really cool plays being made. You get to experience new decks or new characters or whatever without actually having to like be involved. And I say be involved as it, no, I know you're thinking like be involved isn't just like putting forth effort, but Magic is a very involved game. You cannot like, you can't be like, oh, I'll play some Magic today and then just sit down and just kind of like, you know, chit chat while you're like, you know, eating or whatever. Like, that's not the way you play Magic. You have to like, you focus whether you want to or not. You're like in the mode. You're thinking about what you could draw, what your outs are and stuff. Very rarely do you like, yeah, I'll play this 2-2 go, and you're not thinking, and like, you don't, you counter it, okay. Like, that's not the way people play Magic. You just, when you play Magic, you care about what happens. You're playing to a result one way or another, and you care about what happens in the middle of a game. So when you are watching a stream, you get to enjoy all the tense moments, all the top decks, all the commentary, etc., without actually having to like be stressed out or pressured or in the moment of I need to win a game of Magic. Like, you can be upset at the guy when he makes a mistake, or you could be happy for him when he makes an awesome play, and those moments are still fun to enjoy. But you don't have to, there's no pressure on you as a person to like make the correct play yourself. You know, if you think about the, you know, they're discussing a play that's presented to them, and they're like, I could do this or I could do this, and you think about it with them. And maybe you even make a guess. You're like, okay, yeah, I would do this. And then they do the opposite thing and explain why the previous thing was like terrible. And you just go, oh, okay, that makes sense. And you move on. You don't sit there, like, you don't have to go and crunch the numbers and be like, ah, oh, what should I do here? Like, the result of this match is hinging on me coming up with the correct answer. It's just a completely different experience.
Okay. I mean, I guess I kind of understand from, you know, trying to think of like a sports analogy versus, you know, playing a game versus, you know, watching one on TV where you can see things you probably can do yourself, and
hopefully you're being entertained by these things. Like, I know when I do my stream, I'm specifically trying to just be entertaining. I don't care if I win or lose, really, because people, you know, are going to watch different things if they really care about that kind of stuff. But I mean, hopefully you're putting on a show, you're playing good music, you're making jokes, you're interacting with these people. It's not just like, you know, everyone sits back and, you know, puts their hands in their pockets or other places and watches your stream. It's like, you know, you're hanging out with,
I'm listening again. You got me.
You're hanging out with like a group of your buddies or whatever. Like, it's kind of like you're doing a draft on your, you know, computer screen, and there's three of your friends sitting around you all discussing picks. It's almost the exact same thing, except you take those three people and you turn it into 1,000 people or whatever.
It's something I just haven't really, I guess, watched or tried much. Just on paper, it sounds so strange to me. And that's why
I'm telling you, you're a bad person. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
So for you, when you do your streaming, it sounds like you usually are using Twitch for pretty much all your streams.
Yes, I would imagine the vast majority, and by vast majority, I mean 99.9% of people use Twitch.
Yeah, it's kind of the Kleenex of streaming, it seems like, for now.
Yeah, you get you know, a pretty easy recognition. It's a pretty easy transition to just, like, you know, take your OBS or your I don't even know what the other system is. I'm trying to think of it as, I use OBS. I think it's personally best. That's open broadcaster software to do my streaming. But I know other people use different programs. But literally all of those programs just have like a hyperlink attached to Twitch. Like, you put in your information and it just changes your Twitch channel to upload all that. Like, they're literally synonymous with each other, basically.
Is something for the way that you use it, Conley? Is there, I mean, do you have to pay a monthly fee? Like, what is sort of the cost for, say, somebody to be streaming?
100% free to stream. You can even make money off of it if you get partnered with Twitch. Then basically you get to show ads and you make revenue off of every single person that watches that ad. And then you also have subscribers that can subscribe to your channel, and they pay $5 per month to subscribe, and you get half of that money yourself. But yeah, there is no cost for you to stream. You are not guaranteed viewers by any means. There are plenty of people that, if you go through the Magic streams, you know, there's two or three people watching them, but they're still just hanging out with their friends or whatever. Some people do it even over like, instead of Skype. Like, hey, I want to do a draft. You want to help me out with the draft? Okay. Well, they don't load up Skype. Instead, they start streaming, and then the guy, you know, just talks with them over that instead. But it's a pretty decent community. I mean, the Magic streaming is not as popular as like League of Legends or anything like that, but it's getting there.
Well, I mean, League of Legends is basically the biggest game on the planet right now.
Yeah,
so it's kind of hard to beat it.
Yeah, you're talking infinite people play that game. But yes, I don't know. I think you should give it a shot. You shouldn't definitely not watch any streamer that you don't kind of like click with. Like, give everybody like maybe 10-15 minutes to like, you know, I want to see how this person's attitude is. I want to see, you know, what the environment is like. But you should not be watching a stream if you're not vibing with them. If you're like trying to get information from them, that's you know, maybe acceptable. But really, like, there are so many streams available that if you just stop watching that stream and go check out somebody else's, you're bound to find somebody that you're like, okay, I get this guy. We're on the same page, or girl. And then you can enjoy the experience a lot more yourself.
Okay, cool. I just be saying, and what do you feel is kind of a good way of trying to initially find some, we'll say, magic streams to try out? Like you said, it sounds like there's probably going to be thousands that I go through there.
I will link you this thing, but you're going to go to Twitch. Then Magic is not popular enough to be – you scroll down Twitch a little bit, and there'll be a bunch of games. You'll see League of Legends, Hearthstone, Diablo, etc. Magic's not quite popular enough to be amongst those top 10 or 12, whatever it is, games. So you have to click on the See More – See All Live Games, and you scroll down there, and you'll see Magic the Gathering. Right now, there's only 1,800 people watching, and 1,300 of those people are watching New Mop and Nummy. But yeah, so you click on See All Live Games, find Magic the Gathering, and then at that point, you will see a big list of all kinds of games, and they all have titles, and then below that is who is hosting the stream. So you'll see Decay really quickly. So Numat the Nummy, who is a regular streamer, very popular, he has 1,371 viewers right now. The next live is a GP trial that's happening in Minneapolis. Tom, you aren't there. there's a GP trial happening in Minneapolis, and that's being streamed live. So it is not Magic Online. It is actually live paper Magic. So that happens on these Twitch channels as well. And there's 163 people watching that. And then the fourth most viewed thing, just two down, there's only 35 viewers. And then the, like, literally, if you go to the bottom, there are people with zero views. Like, people just like to hang out, and basically some people stream to record it. That way they can go back and watch their games later and kind of analyze mistakes they might have made. Like I said, some people just stream because they enjoy it. Like, there's a million reasons to stream, but a lot of these rooms are not huge. You can sit in there and have an intimate conversation with the streamer. So it's not like you're really removed from the situation if you want to be. You can just be chatting it up with them and discussing plays and stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Huh. Okay. Interesting. I'm just kind of looking through where that sounds good. I could get into the ones where it's a little bit smaller, you know, say if people viewing the channel that you can actually have a conversation with. That does sound pretty cool.
Well, and these are not just like standard or drafts or whatever. Like the sixth most viewed thing is EDH Fun Times. You could literally just go watch somebody play EDH or learn about a new EDH deck. Obviously, there's a bunch of Cube being played right now because that's available. But there's all sorts of Magic being played. It's not just for hardcore people.
Huh, that is literally fascinating. I'm going to have to check this out. There's all types of stuff going on.
Apparently, and they play Duels of the Planeswalkers on this channel as well.
Yeah, that's the way at the bottom. Two viewers by Lydium SHQ.
Okay, well cool. Now she's going to get all kinds of, or he's going to get all kinds of viewers.
There we go.
Shouting out his Twitch name.
You're welcome. I'll just start reading random Twitch names on here. I'm trying to find one. So Spanky _ KC, you are the person that's apparently streaming live at the GP trial in Minneapolis. Wherever that is occurring, kudos. this is why I need to bring, you know, we need to really hammer down the rules for tournament play for me having an infant in my baby Bjorn. And then I would have a backpack on for the toddler. So, I mean, we're really getting into this. Like, I would need a stool of some sort because I couldn't have the back on the chair, but my ass probably would be hanging out because I'd have like a 50-pound backpack on the back, 10, 15 pounds of baby on the front, let alone like all my magic stuff.
The best would be if you were asked to leave the premises for endangering your children.
I'm trying to think, what could you do? I guess you're getting really vigorous with your dice rolling or. All right. So.
Oh, my God.
So, wow, we really got off tangent there, guys. We were talking about Modern.
I don't think that's a bad tangent. I mean, talking about streaming. You know, Conley's definitely, 80 times the competitor than I am. But the biggest thing that I've really been able to take away from streaming is something that I really struggle with is that, there's the idea of variance. And just watching people stream, you just see really, really unlucky things happen. Like, you see other people draw 5 lands in a row when all they need is just, like, any removal spell to win the game. Or they, you know, they totally, you know, keep, like, what looks like a great hand, and then they don't see another land until turn 5. You know, things like that. Like, it gives you an appreciation for what you might not, you know, when you expect something to play out a certain way in a game, and it doesn't. You see it happen to other people, and it's really helped me empathize with that fact about the game.
Yeah, I guess it would also make you not feel quite as bad when it happens to you. Like, I know a lot of people get actively down on themselves or angry or on tilt when really unlikely things like that happen to you. But to be able to view it happen to other people, it's like, okay, I'm not alone in this. Like, this is just a part of the game that we all have to kind of cope with. And as much as it feels like it is painful, the moments, like, this is, again, the game designer me speaking, but all those moments where it feels really painful for you, like, all those things transition into a moment of, like, pure joy when the opposite happens to you later on. So it's, like, kind of a give-and-take sort of system.
So for you, Kelly, say people listen to the podcast, they say, hey, this, maybe they hadn't heard of Twitch, maybe they had, or they're scared to get into streaming. What is sort of the bare minimum things you need to? Because as I look at the kind of the picture of the streams, it looks like usually you should have some sort of a webcam and show yourself in the upper right-hand corner. Is that sort of standard?
You do not have to do that by any means. That is kind of a, I don't know, complimentary type thing. Like, people do it because basically Magic does not have a lot of action going on the screen. There's not, you don't need to, like, for League of Legends, you often see the pros have, like, a little mini webcam at the very bottom, but some will just not have one altogether because there's so much going on that the viewer can look at something at all times and be entertained. But when you're playing Magic online, especially, there are moments where, you know, your opponent's got the clock for a minute and you're just sitting there staring at a board, and it's cool if you can, like, chit chat with these guys and you make it a little more personal if they could see you and they could see your lips moving and they know what you're looking at and they know what your surroundings are and stuff. It just makes it a little bit more of a full experience as opposed to just watching people play Magic.
It's a real person, I guess. You can actually connect with them, yeah, a little bit at least.
Yeah, so it's never like the main thing. I have a webcam on mine, and again, it's also good for branding, of course, if you're really into that. Like, Kibler would never stream without a webcam.
What do you mean by branding, I guess, or in that respect?
Like, every time somebody sees my face or whatever, like, they know it's me, and then they associate that, and, like, that's good for over a long period of time. If people like my work or like my streams or whatever, and they continue to see my face, that's good for me, and then they see me at an event and they want a signature or whatever, like, you know, just the same as if you saw a McDonald's logo every time you open up your computer. Like, you might not think it.
Okay, I'm already getting excited. So yeah, tell me more about this.
No, I'm not trying to say that, like, you know, we're robots trying to you know, trick people into liking us or anything like that. But anytime we can do something that is very low cost to us that people seem to enjoy and is beneficial to, you know, everything, all of our work as a whole, which showing our face on cam is, then, you know, it's might as well do it, basically. Okay. It's the same reason I don't have, you know, a cartoon character from The Simpsons as my Twitter picture or whatever. Like, I could easily do that, but, like, it'd be good if people knew what my face was, so that way if they like my work and they see me at a tournament, they don't go, is that maybe Conley Woods? I can go ask him for a signature. Instead, they could just come up to me and be like, hey, I know you. And then we could be friends.
Like, no, you don't. You saw my picture.
Yes.
Noob. All right. Well, I'm actually going to give this a try. It's pretty cool that open broadcasting software is open source and free. That's pretty slick.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, we're actually kind of getting towards the end of our time, but Kyle, would you kind of mind, and Adam too, telling me, you know, maybe trying to give me like a 5-10 minute summary of kind of where Modern is and what would be some good decks for people to look at if they're maybe new to the format, because we're hearing so much about Modern right now, and some people may not be very familiar with it yet.
All right. I'll let Adam start, and I'll fill in any cracks.
All right. So
he's going to feel those cracks so hard.
So there are a lot of potential decks that you can play. Modern is like other, you know, like Legacy, like any other Eternal format. There's a lot of options. You know, obviously some decks seem to kind of be like at the top. What people would say are some of the best decks include, like, you know, Malira, or a Birthing Pod type decks and Twin type decks. So that's like Splinter Twin, and the decks that try to make an infinite copies of something, whether it's Pestermite or Deceiver Exarch or Restoration Angel, and then there's Birthing Pod decks that can use kind of like a toolbox, and you'll swap one creature for another creature, and it gets you out of this situation. It's a very complex deck to play. I would say that seems to be the summary that I get, but you know, it's one of those decks where once you've mastered it, because you have this ability to go find a lot of other creatures out of your deck, you can kind of pinpoint and silver bullet your way out of a lot of situations. So it might look like you're kind of in a disadvantageous situation, and I've seen this a lot from covering several modern Grand Prix. Is you know, the good pod player knows what's in their deck, knows what they need to go get to fight their way out of the situation they're in, and they just kind of like pull themselves right back out of it with the right sequence of creatures. You know, tutoring is very powerful. And then there's kind of a couple other combo decks out there. One is Scapeshift, and that's basically the Valakut based. I'm going to go swap a whole bunch of lands out for mountains once Valakut's in play, and I'm going to send a whole bunch of lightning bolts to your face. What's interesting is actually two Scapeshift decks went undefeated at Richmond on Grand Prix Richmond Day 1. So that was a 4,300 person modern tournament, but only 7 total made Day 2. And so whether you think that's maybe a metagame thing, just people weren't expecting Scapeshift, and not a lot of people picked it, or you want to interpret that in a different way and say maybe, you know, Scapeshift's you know, is a better combo than people give it credit for, that's another option to look at. The format generally leans towards combos. Once Deathrite Shaman was banned, the ability for Jund decks to kind of just grind out value and stay incrementally ahead got a lot harder. So they kind of switched to a more aggressive build, some drag, you know, trying to think of the dragon that comes into play and it deals one to everything that flies and taps it. You know, that's in there, and some versions use Stormbreath Dragon. But ultimately, the format definitely leans towards combo, and being prepared and looking at your options at those decks, I think, are probably the best place to start if you want to really get into modern to be competitive.
And I guess, I mean, do you guys have a preferred sort of source to go read, you know, be it a forum or maybe a player articles that you would say, hey, I want to learn more about modern, I need to go do what it wants to do some homework? What would be some place that you would recommend to try?
I would personally kind of pick around. You're going to have a lot more modern articles as like GP approaches. You're not going to have you right now. Basically, your options are to look at articles about Richmond or the Pro Tour. So like go back in time, Google basically modern articles, type in the Pro Tour name, whatever. You're going to get all kinds of you know, articles and or deck techs and or commentaries from forums, etc., on those decks. So you can do that if you're interested in the decks that have been played in modern. Otherwise, you can wait towards when the Pro Tour, or not the Pro Tour, but when Minneapolis approaches, and then people will continue to write about modern then to give people ideas of what to play, etc. And you can read all the articles like fresh as they come out. And of course, there you're going to want to go to all the places you go to for normal articles: Channel Fireball, Star City Games, TCG Player, Gathering Magic, everything like that. And you basically just want to pick out the modern articles. Most of them will be labeled. Most of them, some of them you'll have to be able to, you know, read a title and decipher a little bit, but there's really no, like, there's no mana drain for modern or anything like that. I mean, you can always go to like MTG Salvation and look at their forums. Sometimes that's going to do more harm than good, but
yeah, I guess it's the I used to be one of the forums I used to read, but it seems like things have changed quite a bit there, right? It seems like I'm trying to find sort of a new major community forum or hub for Magic.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of split out. I mean, there's really no central thing, and that's kind of a good thing. Like, if you look at basketball, for example, there's no central NBA site. Like, I mean, there's NBA.com, of course, but it's not like that's where all the people hang out and talk about basketball. Like, there's a million little forums and whatever, and all that shows is that, like, the subculture is large enough to support diversity within itself, which is good for sustained longevity. Like, if people feel like they can both be a part of the community while being unique and having their own flavor and flair to everything, then that is great for us. So it's actually almost better that there is no Gleamax, if you will, because that's kind of like what the Gleamax goal was like a central Magic the Gathering social networking site where everybody is kind of linked into this thing. And it's almost good that there isn't that, or at least that thing's not popular.
Yeah, totally. God, I totally forgot about Glee Max. That was a while ago. All right. Well, so cool. I mean, obviously, we'll be talking about this, you know, on future episodes as we come up to Grand Prix Minneapolis. And if you're new to listening to the show at all or couldn't understand us last episode, is we are trying to get a big get-together, hopefully, for Grand Prix Minneapolis, May 9th through 11th. So if you want to get together and meet, you probably want to meet either Conley or Adam. I'm going to be hanging around there as well. Might potentially have some kids with me. But we just want to hope maybe get together people's for dinner or something just to have fun. Like you said, get to meet people you either heard or maybe even read their articles or seen them on videos at a GP or a pro tour. We just want to get a bunch together a bunch of people and have fun, which I think is cool.
By the way, they could see Adam or I at all kinds of Grand Prix. This is like the only Grand Prix in the world they could see you at. So I'm pretty sure there's going to be some people that want to see you.
Okay, thank you. But my ego needed just a little bit of rubbing. So.
Well, no, I'm just saying, if somebody wanted to see me in Montreal, they could have said hi, or the same thing for Adam. Like,
yeah, but if they're in here in Minneapolis, you know, we're in Minnesota. We don't, you know, fraternize with those other states. We try to stay here, where, you know, the Midwest. Good, yes, good, wholesome moral values. We're the breadbasket of that right here.
Some call it Midwest, others call it South Canada.
Yeah, we are kind of Canada's sort of jocks wrap down here, it kind of feels like. But
yeah, exactly.
We don't have poutine. I'm surprised we don't have more sort of, I guess, Canadian influence. In northern Minnesota, northern North Dakota, there definitely is a lot more.
You basically have poutine. All right, can I just get this through everyone's head right now?
We don't call it poutine.
You have poutine. I have poutine. I can go to Wendy's right now and get some poutine. It's called chili cheese fries. It's the same damn thing. It's the same concept.
I thought poutine.
I know they use
cheese.
They use cheese curds and gravy, but it's the same damn thing.
That's like calling a hot dog the same as a hamburger because it's meat in a bun.
No,
those are totally different.
But it tastes the same. If you have good chili cheese fries, it's the same as good poutine. Just people are used to eating shitty chili cheese fries because they get them from their crappy fast food places, and are like, yeah, chili cheese fries. But if you were to get good chili cheese fries, you'd be like, these are just as good as poutine.
You're literally making no sense to me right now.
I'm taking a stance here.
I agree with you, Conley. Good chili cheese fries are as good as good poutine, but they are very different food things. They taste very different. They have different textures, different expectations. They are not the same food.
So Conley, if I got you the world's best gaffle beater, you would say, hey, that's just as good as my really good chili cheese fries. Even though they're totally different foodstuffs.
I don't know what a gaffle beater is.
Gaffle beater is basically the Swedish version of lutefisk. So cod-soaked in lye.
Yeah, that's not comparable to a chili cheese fry.
But if it's really good gaffle beater, I mean, it's really been soaking there. It's really gray. It's really slimy. It's cold.
Do you realize that, like, poutine? Let's compare poutine to chili cheese fries. Both involve fries. We
no,
together on that.
Curds.
Both involve fries. True or false?
Something fried. I'll give you that.
No, fries. Actual potato French fries are involved in both situations. So okay. You start with the basis of that for literally both. Then you take a meaty, saucy substance and you put that on top. Then you take a cheesy, gooey substance and you put that on top. And then you're done. That happens in both
situations. The ones in Canada and ones at my Wendy's.
The Wendy's one is bad. That is not real chili cheese fries. Although some people, apparently Wendy's is like renowned, I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of people get there. We don't have, besides Dairy Queen, there's not a lot of places you can get chili cheese fries at like a fast food type restaurant.
Hey, go to a diner, the old American diner, Route 66.
Oh, when you guys are in Minneapolis, if you want to go north, we can go to RJ Rich's. It is the ultimate like greasy spoon truck stop restaurant. I mean, they replaced their booths after about 35 years just because they had to stay with the times.
Look, I like poutine. I'm not saying poutine is bad. I'm just saying people overhype it too much when they could just go find a great chili cheese fry place and they would love it just as much. But they don't take the time to love themselves in America, only abroad.
Yeah. Well,
I guess, is Canada considered abroad? I don't know if Canada's considered abroad.
I'm guessing you take a lot of time to enjoy yourself. So I believe you when you say that.
When it comes to cheese and saucy meat substances, yes.
Okay.
Of course I do. That is important in life, like, that you have to be willing to eat the correct fried potato substance with cheese and meat on top of it.
So is that like is that your favorite comfort food? Like, you know, you're trying to get to Cincinnati and the plane erupts into flames, you know, horrible screaming, like, I'm not going to get on the plane because it's snowing or there's a mudslide, whatever it is that happened. Is that the food you go get? Be like, hey, I need a pick-me-up?
No, I don't even know what my favorite comfort food is. It's definitely not chili cheese fries.
You don't have like a go-to, like, you know.
I mean, I have some, but like my go-to food is easily Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Like, if it's 2 a.m. and I have a craving for something, I'm running to a 7-Eleven to get a Ben and Jerry's chunk.
So which romantic comedy do you watch when you eat that ice cream? That's kind of the lead-up question to it.
It's called TNA 2013, and it's about – never mind. Let's just stop there.
Are we talking about wrestling or not wrestling?
Am I pregnant? No. Everyone.
Yeah. Oh, Renee Zellweger, she's the best ever.
Multiple people have asked me this, when I have my ice cream fits, they're like, oh, you're like a pregnant woman or whatever. What about liking ice cream makes you have to be a pregnant woman? What kind, like, who doesn't like ice cream, first of all? And second of all, if you have the capability and desire to drive out at 3 a.m. to a Walmart and buy the ice cream, what is wrong with that?
That's dedication. It's sad.
I am a socially responsible human being who wants damn ice cream. You don't.
Which
take
flavor?
That away from
are you? Are you like
Chunky Monkey? Food? Chunky okay. Monkey's number one.
Pregnant lady. I'm sorry. Yep.
What?
I'm with Adam on that one.
Definitely. I mean, have you taken a test yet, Conley? Are you sure?
Yeah, plastic or metal spoon? Or are you just like eating with the lid? Like you rip a piece of the hard cardboard off the lid and you use that as
first of all, I only do plastic spoons when I'm on the road, and the only thing that the 7-Eleven has is a plastic spoon, and it always breaks approximately 3 bites in, and then I take like a pen or a pencil or a Sharpie, and I eat the rest of it using that, and it's sad and depressing. So why do you have to bring that up? Second of all, I use a metal spoon when I'm at home because I'm not poor.
But to me, I there's actually a taste difference. Like when I get, say, ice cream at like a baseball game, like I want the wooden little plank spoon. You know, it's literally just a stick that's going to give you splinters in your tongue, but it tastes better because it's off.
No, it doesn't taste better. It's just nostalgia from your youth when you used to run up to the ice cream man at like a pregnant woman. How do you like it, Tom? How do you like being called a pregnant woman for liking your ice cream? Huh? All those 12-year-old kids running to the sound of Ring Around the Rosie, all those pregnant women. Huh?
Hey, Conley.
I'm very confident with my, I'm totally cool.
My wife is like 7 months pregnant, and she was ecstatic, thrilled that Ben & Jerry's was on sale. And if you bought Ben & Jerry's, you got the local grocery store's ice cream as well. It was like a buy this, try this.
What is that? Why would you? Huh? That's weird.
That's
by the way,
weird.
Ben & Jerry's new core flavors are the shizzy.
Agreed.
If you haven't had Ben and Jerry's core, you have to go get it. They're the
What's
nut.
What's a core?
They take like two different types of ice cream and they put it in the same pint, and then down the middle they put whatever awesome ingredient combines the two together. So like one of them is like chocolate ice cream on one half, and the other half is like a mocha chip ice cream, and in the middle is a giant tube of caramel. And you can just like you can like put that in as you see fit to either side, or mix it all together. It's amazing.
It sounds like the Goobers like jam and peanut butter together.
Yes,
but
except somehow the center thing stays liquidy. It does, not like liquid. It's like
but it's like not like thick, frozen like caramel, hard.
But it's not frozen. Yeah, I don't know how they do it, but it's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I agree, Conley. If we go back to the beginning of the show, this is not a podcast about magic at all. I completely agree with you now at this point.
Well, all I know is next time I hang out with Adam's wife, we're going to get some Ben and Jerry's together, and I'm going to say screw you two.
Yeah. Well, Adam, congratulations. I did not know you're – because this will be your number two, correct?
Well, can you not call
number two? Too many.
Well, I don't know. I assume he has – I didn't know how many kids he has at home already.
Well, I know we have two, my daughter and myself.
So this will be your third – I will say kids are the age of 18. Let me verify it that way. You're not helping me. So I'm guessing this is your second child. I'm just trying to verify this. Okay, thank you. I didn't think that'd be that hard of a question, but we got the answer. We got there in the end.
I told you. I said, well, we have two, my daughter and myself.
Yeah, well, but I was just like, is he being funny? Oh, wow, he drove Conley away. There we go. So Adam, Conley may hop back on, but Conley says he'll be right back. But I think we're going to wrap it up because it's getting towards my bedtime, and Adam, you'll definitely want to be catching up on your beauty sleep before you have another newborn at home. Are you far enough away from your first kid that you have forgotten what it's like to have a newborn?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it comes right back. But it doesn't seem as bad the second time around. Maybe just because you kind of know what to expect. You will miss those. At least like with number one, like when they're sleeping, you can take a nap. But when you have the second one who is, especially they're like toddler and above and they're ripping around, you don't get that extra nap anymore, which is rough.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to work out for my wife. She does a lot of the child caring, mainly because she has a degree in it. So like, I'm like, how do we handle this? And she's like, well, and then it explains it to me like I'm 5 years old. I'm like, ah.
Makes sense. Well, that way you can explain it to Conley then. So it's okay, you know.
I'm good there. I don't have any, none on the way. No number one, no number two. I only do those in the bathroom.
You don't have to do them in the bathroom. You could do them pretty much anywhere you can squat down.
I mean, true. But try to be a little courteous.
Yeah, we'll have to share mad shooter stories at some time in the future. Because I think pretty much everybody, either through work or school, has encountered for some reason, there's a mad shitter. Do you know what I'm talking about, where somebody just destroys bathrooms for no known reason by pooping all over the place?
Yes. I was a resident assistant for 4 years. We had a guy who decided the sinks were the best place to do that.
Multiple times or just once?
Multiple times. Yeah, it was clearly out of like some sort of spite because we clearly had a full floor meeting about it, and we're like, hey, you know, guys, you probably shouldn't poop in the sink because, you know, that's where you wash your hands.
I don't want to be your mom or anything, guys, but don't shit in the sink, okay? I'm just going to put
it there. The result was an intensification of the sink pooping.
Yeah, don't tell me how to poop. I want to poop actually on, like, the faucet, or is it going down the little thing? You know, they're going to get inventive with their poop. And there's really no reason, especially in, like, residence halls where there's multiple. It's like a gym bathroom where you could.
Are you aware that this is now the second time we've veered into the topic of pooping, which is one time more than we've talked about magic?
That's okay. Well, it says it's Slow News Week, so we gave a warning at the beginning of the show. But it is still true that it's coming up to my bedtime. I'm becoming a pumpkin. So Adam and Conley,
what does that mean, becoming a pumpkin?
Cinderella or Midnight, the character.
Oh, okay. I got it. I thought it was some old person's thing.
Or Disney.
I thought it was some old person slang. I just didn't get the reference.
Oh, God. I'll bring old person sayings next time. Because if you're not from Minnesota, so we could spend a little entire podcast talking about Ollie and Lena jokes. And they range from like Pixar, I would say even Disney G-rated, to just triple X filthy. I mean, there's a huge range of Ollie and Lena jokes out there.
I literally cannot wait to hear them.
I'm excited. I knew you'd like them, so that's why I brought it up. So Adam Conley. No, literally, I can't wait forever until I die.
Yeah, I literally can't wait.
All right, guys. Adam Conley, thank you very much for joining me.
So before we sign off, I just want to, well, as part of my sign off,
you probably want to mention that Twitter.
I'm on Twitter at @the_stibs, STYBS, of course. But more importantly, if you want to learn about a specific format, honestly, the best way to go about trying to catch up is to go and look across all of the different Magic websites. So obviously I'm partial to Gathering Magic, but you know, the things that Conley puts out on TCG Player and Channel Fireball and the things that are on Star City, all of those places are going to be great sources for seeing people explain decks, break down what they do, why they do the things they do. And the formats shift constantly. So, you know, just because you fell out a year ago doesn't mean that you can't learn what you need to learn and get caught up, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. You know, if you're only going to attend one or two Grand Prix, because those are the ones that you can get to in your area, just focus on being prepared for those. You know, take a month or two beforehand and just really dive in, and you can probably surprise yourself with how far you can get.
All right, and Conley, where can people find, maybe contact you or find you? We mentioned it, but let's summarize it.
Twitter at Conley81, just on number 81. And then channelfireball.com, tcgplayer.com. You can find articles, videos on channelfireball.com, Facebook if you really are interested, although I don't post on there nearly as much anymore. And at a live tournament near you.
There you go. Most of them.
Yes. But yeah. Assuming my plane works.
Yeah, you have literally the worst luck I've ever heard for planes. And finding your car and just most modes of transportation. Like, have you ever like had a canoe sink or like a paddle boat just burst into flames?
But the good news is I've gotten through it all. I'm an independent woman, Tom. And despite hard times and trials raising up against me, I've defeated
them. I'm excited for Tyler Perry's movie, Mom. problems. I'm all there. You can find me at Twitter, PSG Reader, PSG R-E-A-D-E-R. And we actually have an email account for this show. So I'm going to take a deep breath. mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. So we like getting emails. All three of us can see the email account if we choose to. So I personally, Twitter is great. Emails are my preferred. I just like reading emails. So, guys.
And don't forget, the podcast has its own Twitter account as well, at MTGPotpourri.
Yes.
That's so good. if you're so lazy, you don't even want to write an email, but you don't want to tweet any of us individually, you can still annoy us.
You can also just include at MTGPotpourri in your tweets to any one of us individually. That way other people could, if they're interested in looking up things that have been said to the official channel, then they can see what your comment is, etc. So it's not the worst to just include the at MTGPotpourri thing on there.
Do you think at some point Twitter's going to have to, because I mean, obviously it's a good thing to do that. I mean, it's become very common where all of a sudden you used to have 144 characters to express your, true wisdom. And now it's down to about 60 because you have about 600 of these,
Yes, that's true to an extent, I guess. I don't know.
I am 100% fine with having less characters to express things because it makes people be brief. Like, state your issue or your question within one question. I like it. I love Twitter.
Yes.
There we go.
Why is my blank bleeding?
What? That sounds like a question for veterinarian Tom.
Yes, I was asking. I wanted to know in case my Una portal butthole or whatever the hell that thing was.
Cloaca. Your old genital pore. If you have one of those, we should probably talk.
I'm a scholarly individual. I can clearly say this word, but I'm going to say it like I'm drunk instead.
So if I have a cloaca,
no pore.
Do I still have a butt crack? I'm trying to follow you guys here. Come on, help me out.
Hang on. I think I can squeeze one more drop out of this. Is it safe to say Tom? True. Is it safe to say Tom broke the genitalia format?
Tom broke some genitalia, yes.
Yeah, that one I'm not touching.
That's what she said.
All right. Well, thank you very much, BJ Woods. And Adam, we will get you a great nickname besides being Screwed Hard by Conley Woods. That's just too long of a nickname.
Screwed Hard.
S-H.
Screwed Hard Staborski.
Yeah, S-H Staborski.
That's not a very good nickname. Screwed Hard Staborski's not. That's not the one you want to tell your kids about.
Hey, guess what? Guess what, new baby Staborski? Daddy's S-H for Screwed Hard. Oh, I'm going to put on a little onesie for you. And then I'm going to go to jail because your onesie will say Screwed Hard on it. All right, guys. Let's wrap this one up. Thank you again very much for listening to MTG Potpourri. Bruce Richards, I apologize. And thank you. Join us probably next week for another episode.
Probably next week because we're going to